Hey, what's going on, everyone? I'm super excited to have Steve Cha here. Oh my God, it's been so long. I was always jealous of you and just being able to travel and do your own thing. And I'm glad that you kind of pushed, well, you kind of suggested like, hey, you know, look into this stuff. And it was funny because in the past when you gave me feedback on how I can improve getting more listeners and stuff like that, I was so resistant. I was just like, man, fuck this guy. Like, I don't even know him like that, you know? But now like, I'm like, everything he said is 100% true. So you know, I think we're connected.
I think it's because like I've seen your trajectory and I've seen you grow over the years. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, time is the most valuable thing. And so mm-hmm. I knew that the investment of my time to you would be eventually like, you know, it would pay dividends, right? Like I like to call it karma ROI, right? Like it's just ROI, a return on investment of time. Mm-hmm. And you know, unlike a lot of people, you haven't given up. And so I just want to applaud you on your consistency, right?
Thank you. Yeah, man. And it's just crazy to think that, like, I honestly never thought my life would be the way it is now. It sounds like you started doing a lot of this personal development stuff like way before I did. I just never would have projected just to have the life that I have now. So it's just cool to, and I'm still, we're both relatively young, right? In the grand scheme of things. So I'm just happy that, I think you were one of the first people, like normal people, I guess, that I've met, like, you know, cause you meet a lot of people through this stuff, like Tony Robbins, stuff like that. And that was definitely not the group of people I surrounded myself with. So it's just cool to be able to talk to someone about some of these things. Cause I do think people are like, why would you do like an 80-hour thing? That's like, that doesn't make sense. Like 6 days like that. So you travel to these conferences and you guys do what? Like it's just mind-boggling to some people.
You know, I think it's crazy, you know, like I think it's, and for everybody that's listening, that doesn't know what he's talking about personal development work, emotional intelligence work. You know, I think, you know, a lot of my friends that I've met that have done this kind of work, we kind of fell into it by accident. Right. Mm. And it was kind of like, yeah, we didn't know what to expect, but you know, I know Davidson for probably close to 20 years now. Right. And, you know, we weren't always close in the beginning. And, you know, when I was younger, I had a lot different life than I do now. You know, I think, I was very reckless. I wasn't doing a lot of the things that, no, you know, like, yeah. So what do you think, what was your perspective on me? Like,
I mean, you are always very confident, right? It's I feel like what we see in others is sometimes like what we feel like we want to be like. So, I mean, I never really like hated anyone, you know, but I definitely envy the way you carried yourself, like in terms of like, it was just like, you were always very comfortable in your own skin and like zero shits given. Like you were kind of like the dude that would walk around like, hey, like I know I'm smart. Like I have a lot of friends. Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't think I ever looked to you as a bad guy or anything like that. You know, I think you were like, I don't know if shameless was the right word, but you're always kind of like uninhibited, I would say is the word I would use.
You know, it's kind of strange because like I grew up in like two worlds, right? I grew up in one of the worst neighborhoods in New York City and I grew up in one of the richest suburbs. And so I had that, like I lived like a dual life. And so I took a little bit of both from, you know, like each other. And I remember when I was younger, I used to always lecture the younger Asian people on like, like, you know, like be proud of being Asian. Like I hated the fact that like, you know, we met each other probably like 2001. Right. And what people don't realize about 2001 is like, I know that this whole Asian hate thing is coming up across now, but there was this kind of like thing that like Asian people were pussies, you know, like, and yeah. I got a lot of that. And I was like, bro, wrong person, dude. You know,
like, yeah, wrong person to mess with.
Wrong person, you know?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, and that was obviously like my Napoleon complex and like a lot of things. And, you know, now I will defend myself, but now I just ignore a lot of things and I'm way mm-hmm. more comfortable. And like listening to you describe me is kind of like really weird. Cause like, I look back at like when I was younger and I was like, man, dude, like I was just a dick. You know, I was a dick. Like, you know, like,
all right, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah,
you know, like I remember like if you sat at my table and I didn't like you, I'm like, why are you sitting here? You know what I mean? Like, I don't like you. You know what I mean? So I was just very upfront about things. And the thing is, I just didn't have that gear of playing like political correctness or like being like nice or any, like, if I didn't like you, you know what, you knew I didn't like you, you know? And if I loved you, you knew I loved you.
Yeah. You definitely show love. I remember that, like your boys, like you took care of all your boys, you know, like I respect that. Cause it's rare to find people who are like, will do anything to support their group, you know?
Yeah. And I think we both had that actually, you know, I think we both had that. And like, I remember, you know, when I went into my personal development work, right. And I realized like who I was and I got all the feedback and all that stuff. Right. I remember going back and asking all my friends from college. And when I was younger, I was like, why did you hang out with me? I was like, I was the worst, bro. And I remember a mutual great friend of us, you know, like a brother to us, Tommy. I remember I asked him and he goes, man, he's like, because your essence was always good. You know, like he literally told me, he goes, man, he's like, if any of us needed something, you would be one of the first people there. And your essence was always good. The way you approach things, not so good. but I remember, you know, so.
Yeah.
But it's insane to think about 20 years later, bro. 20 years later, we're talking right now. And so let me ask you, how did you get into this, into Landmark, right? You did Landmark. I did Choice Center in Las Vegas. Landmark.
Okay.
Yeah. So how did you get into it?
You know, what's funny. You mentioned Tommy. He actually gave me a rude awakening, actually. So he was one of the first dudes who was like real with me and was like, dude, like you need to get your shit together, you know, because I think he felt bad for me and he like gave me $200 because I was just so broke that I think I had to pay someone back or something like that, you know? So I think, like you said, we all kind of hit a threshold where we're like, dude, like I need to like get my stuff together. Like, I think I was way too much of a people pleaser. I think I was like the opposite of you actually in a lot of ways where I was too nice. And I was just like, when you do a lot of this stuff, you realize, okay, it was like, you know, my dad left me. I grew up pretty poor, living off government assistance. So my self-worth was like not that strong. But I was always like looking back at, like you said, like I went back and asked like 100 different people like things about me, right? Like, what was I like in high school? What was I like? Blah, blah, blah. And I realized that like I was always accepted, but I didn't, in my mind, I felt like I didn't belong anywhere. Like I didn't have any like boys, like close group of friends, but in reality I did. I just didn't see it because I was just like in my shit. But I would say the tipping point was like I was like depressed. I wasn't making good money. I know, I feel like you were always pretty talented in that realm of like, you know, you have a lot of self-worth. I think for me, like the tipping point was like I was getting fired from a bunch of jobs. I was being a shitty boyfriend to all the girls I've dated. I think money was like a really big thing. And then health-wise too, like I was just like super lazy, like just playing video games all day. Oh yeah. Tommy was like, yo, like you got to stop playing video games. Like that shit's fucking up your life. So the combination of video games, health, and like, I wasn't close to any of my family. Like I wasn't close to my sisters. I was like, shit, like I need to do something. So the rude awakening I think happened like when I was like, okay, like I have a shit ton of debt. And then that kind of like pulled me to look more into this stuff.
And so who got you in? Like, did anybody tell you about it? Or did you like just Google something? Or
I there's this girl who, in typical Davidson fashion, I showed up like an hour late to our coffee chat, right? This like really nice Chinese girl named Christina Wu. She was a part of Landmark. And I was going through another self-development program that I resisted. But I think Landmark was the one that made the biggest difference. Cause I think I was still in my shit. Like the first year I was just like trying to get to, you know, I was just trying to build some sense of identity and some sort of worth. And then I think Landmark like really ripped that open and was like, wow, like this is who I am. But so I showed up super late and then she was like super nice. Like she's like, oh, it's okay. Like it's understandable. Like, don't worry. And I was like, wow. Like I've never met anyone who like most of my friends would like rip my head off, you know? So she invited me to this thing called Landmark Special Evening, which is basically like an event where they like kind of sell you like the dream and stuff like that. And it was the first time I called my dad in like 15 years at the time, just to like listen to him. But I was still in my shit, so I wasn't truly listening, you know. But I hit him up, and at the time I was just like, dude, like if you in my head I was like, if you died, dad, I wouldn't even care. Like I wouldn't even go to your funeral. That's how much I hated you, because like he just was like, I just felt like he was a dick, because he just left us. And then it was also the first day that I called my friend who, this Korean guy who was my roommate at the time, who was addicted to painkillers. And he was just like stealing from me and like everyone, he was lying to everyone. And like, I called him and I forgave him. I was like, hey man, like you were going through some crazy shit. Like, you know, it's all, we're cool, man. Like hit me up if you ever need anything, you know?
I think, so, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think that's the key difference between me and you is because do you remember... one of our brothers, he was addicted to heroin.
Oh yeah.
You remember that? And I got a phone call at like 3 a.m. from one of our friends. And it was like, hey Steve, like this is a problem. And I woke up because I thought it was something else, went over to that kid's room, literally almost broke down the door, grabbed him by the neck, told me to give him all his drugs. Right.
And he kept,
and like, you know, heroin addicts, they're kind of like, they're squirrelers, right? So I knew when he was lying, right? And I was just like, give it to me. And I feel, in retrospect, I feel bad. I smacked him around a little bit. I threw his TV out the window, you know?
Wow.
And at the end, like when I realized how bad he was is because like, I you know, he had so many bags, right? I think he had close to like 8 to 12 bags. I don't remember. This was 20 years ago, right?
Wow.
And I remember, I was like, fuck. I was like, I'm not going to take care of him. You're not going to take care of him. So I called his parents. You know, and I remember I took his phone, called his parents and said, you got to get your son and you got to get him now.
Wow. Know? Good for you, man. Yeah.
No, but you remember this. And you remember all your friends were upset at me that they said I had no place. And I was like, bro, this kid's killing himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we ended up living in the same city, but I guess for the rest of his life, like he just never wanted, like, I remember seeing him a couple of times afterwards and he would never look me in the eyes.
Really? There's so much shame associated with that, you know, like it's hard for him to let go of that. Cause same with my friend, like I forgave him, but he's still never like, I don't know. He's like, I've done too much damage. Like, I don't want to, you know what I mean? So yeah.
Yeah. But like, the thing is me and that guy weren't even like that close. Right. But it was more one of our really close friends was like, Steve, I don't know what to do. You know what I mean? And I don't know if you remember this, but he tried to intervene and the kid called the cops on him like a week before. Oh, wow. You know what I mean? Yeah. This
a lot is of crazy stuff, man. Like looking back at it, like there was some crazy stuff.
Yeah, but the thing is I remember I got a lot of shit from your friends, like that I overstepped, and I'm like, fuck that. I'm like, this kid was killing himself.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And he was driving to one of the worst neighborhoods in New Jersey, like the most dangerous areas to pick it up. So I was like, man, but the reason why I brought that up is just because like it's kind of the difference in style, you know. And
much,
I don't think I've changed that much in that sense. It's like, bro, like, you know, like if I see someone on a destructive kind of thing, is I'm gonna be in your face. If
good
I
care you, about man. You,
I'm gonna good be in you. Your face.
I respect that actually, because I have, now that you're talking about this, I had two friends that died from what you're saying exactly, right? Two brothers of mine, and man, like it still breaks my heart that I wasn't able to intervene earlier, because we knew, you know, like you said, like it's pretty obvious when they're on that path, right? And I was guilty of like, yeah, I mean, it's tough, right? Like I was also doing it,
bro. I think you're judging yourself too much, and I think there's people that like, I'm great at being an interruption, right? I'm great at being an interruption, but I'm not great at coddling. Right. I'm not great at listening. I'm not great at, you know, kind of helping them along the process of them. But I understand that weakness. And I'm like, here's your parents. Boom. You know, like he's addicted. Get him to rehab. He's going to die, you know. And, you know, I remember that when they came to pick him up, right, because they picked him up at that morning.
Wow.
You know, they knew that he was doing drugs.
Heroin. Oh, OK.
They knew. And that's what boggles my mind. Mm. Right. They knew he was doing.
You're right. Most people just let it slide, you know.
Yeah, and I didn't understand that, right?
Yeah,
I just didn't understand it, and it's just like to me, what I thought was more disrespectful is letting him do that, you know? And like, you know, I understand it was wrong of me to destroy his room, but, you know, I had to see the extent of the damage, right?
Yeah.
I literally threw his TV out the window.
I wish I was there to witness that.
Bro, it was insane. Like,
yeah.
And I probably slapped him around a little bit, which in hindsight, I shouldn't have, but.
I think you deserve it. Cause I think the more you pattern interrupt, like if it's anything Tony Robbins has taught us, is like, he's the master of pattern interruption, and you've been just that. So I'm sure, I mean, hopefully he thanks you for that. Cause like, I mean,
it's not about thank you. It's not me to thank. I wasn't even close with him. You know, I know he was smart. Yeah. I know he was all these things. You know, I think what's really funny about it, it's just like, I kind of resented a lot of your friends for not intervening on it.
Yeah. Not
resented. I thought they were kind of bitches, you know?
Right. I see that. I mean, now I can see it. Cause like I was saying, those two guys that died, like that still messes me up that I wasn't able. And it was so clear, you know, like, I think, like you said, everyone knew, right. It was like, if anything, we were enabling, right. Cause we were the ones that's like, yo, let me get some or whatever. You know what I mean? So like, if anything, like we made it even worse. So, yeah, it's sad, right? One of the dudes, he was my age. So I think he died when he was like 27. Yeah. And then the other dude was 25 when he died. It's like, oh, so young, you know?
And it is crazy, right? Because, you know, we've done this emotional intelligence work, and I don't know if you've talked to these master trainers and stuff. And it's like, drug addiction is a lack of relationships, right? Like that the relationships in your life just aren't there, you know? And it's a form of avoidance. I don't know if that's true. I'm, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just saying.
I could see
like,
that. Yeah. You know? And ironically, that one guy, so the one guy who died, he was very popular. So like on the outside, he was like the life of the party. He would like, you know, he'd be the dude who like would just bring girls home and just like, you know what I mean? Like he was that dude, like the guy that everyone's like, man, like that guy is just super confident, right? The other dude was a little different. Like I could see what you're saying about the lack of relationship. I think he was just so out there that he wasn't grounded. You know, he was living in like this world of psychedelics that, you know, was far removed from reality.
Yeah, but man, like I think a lot of people, like they think I'm an extrovert, right? Like you've seen me at parties when we were younger, like I'll talk to everyone. I'm so confident. But actually I get all my energy when I'm alone. I spend a lot of time alone, you know? And I think it's overwhelming for me to be like on, right. To be on, but like, you know, like it's natural for me. Like I don't act a certain way. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but for me, it just drains my energy and I just can't be around that all the time. You know, for me growing up is like, I always looked at you as the understanding one, the kid that, you know, like everybody liked, you know, you were so nice and you got all the really feminine, cute little girls. You know, like you know, I think every one of your girls was like a spinner, right? Like she was, you know, and if you don't know what a spinner is, it's like 100 to 100 pounds.
You're right. Yeah.
And I think one of the things I remember most about you 20 years ago is you used to say, Steve, like, I'm not smart enough. I have to study.
Huh.
I remember you saying that to me. I know you did your video games and stuff, but I remember you had this like limiting belief about yourself, and you compensated it by working hard.
Right.
You
know? That's fair. Yeah. It's crazy now that I think, my whole career, right. Like getting into LinkedIn, which is like such a competitive, there was a million applicants, right? Like the business I was able to overcompensate by being successful in business. And then I realized I'm like, shit, like no matter how much money, how many houses I have, if I don't love myself first, like it doesn't matter, you know? So that took me a while to realize.
Bro, how many of our friends were losers in college? Well, I don't want to say losers, but losers in college. And then they get their hedge fund job or something like that. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, like, I just meet them like 5 years later and they're like, you know, I went to the club and fuck this bitch. And like, they're just like, whoa. Like, I'm just like, damn, bro. I'm just like, man, like their relationship with women is kind of like they're vengeful. Right. And I'm just like, whoa, you know, like, I can remember their evolution. I didn't see their full evolution. So I'm just always weirded out by that. I'm like, wow. You know, and they just sit there and they try to like alpha me. And I'm like, bro, do you remember who I was? Like, I'm like, bro, like I didn't lose that, you know? And I feel like they're just like, oh shit, you know? But I think that's the difference is like, you know, when we went to the bachelor party in Florida, right? I met a lot of your friends, you know, mm-hmm. it was just like, you're so different now. Cause I didn't drink when I lived in Vegas. I didn't drink. I didn't drink. And so I was just cleaning up the Airbnb, letting everybody have a good time and kind of more in a supporter role and stuff like that. And people are like, what happened to you? And I'm like,
that blew my mind actually. When I was like, yeah, I remember that actually. You took care of us too. Yeah. I was like, what is going on here?
You know, because the thing is, it's like, you know, for such a long time I was drinking, right? And I got up to like 230 pounds at my peak, right?
Wow.
And I started getting skin tags.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I started having like erectile dysfunction. Like, oh, I had a lot of issues, right? Because I was just so overweight. And I realized, like, when I Googled the skin tag and I remember, I was like, oh, wait a minute. This is a precursor to diabetes, right? I think I was like 30 and I was already like, couldn't walk up flights of steps and stuff. It's so crazy. At that point is I switched and I went to the gym. I woke up every day at 5:30 AM and went to the gym, you know?
Oh yeah. The MMA stuff, right?
Yeah. I just went back in there and just like went back into it and got myself into shape. And I remember it was just like a lot of uncomfortable conversations and, you know, I think normalizing those uncomfortable guys were like talking to my friends about erectile dysfunction and stuff like that. And a lot of them were really welcoming. But again, like you said, I was always shameless. You know, I was always shameless. Like, I didn't care. Like, I just want to solve the problem, right? You know, and I remember one of my friends, and I guess this was kind of the foray into getting into the emotional intelligence work. And he was like, how much porn do you watch? And I'm like, not that much, but like, I'll watch it like 30 minutes, an hour a week and stuff like that. And he's like, I got this TED talk you got to watch. You know what I mean? Hmm. And I watched it and you start to learn how porn was changing, you know, like your physio, I don't know what the word, neurology, neural, whatever, you know, I'm not smart enough to understand what that word is, but you know, the neural connections, right?
Right.
And so, you know, I stopped and obviously the results weren't right away, but with exercise, eating healthier, not drinking alcohol, you know, it slowly started coming back. Right. And, and I realized like, you know, I always lashed out, you know, like you always thought I was confident, but you know, I actually thought that I lashed out a lot, like, and used my, like my physical attributes or used my, like, you know, anger to actually intimidate people or something like that. Right. And I remember one of my friends, he told me there's a difference between fear and respect, you know, and people don't respect you. They fear you.
Wow. Someone said that to you.
Yeah, then, you know, and if you look at it, man, like it makes a lot of sense because, you know, a lot of the people that I had a lot of respect for were the ones that were able to stand up to me. Right. And we actually became really close friends. You know, and so whether it was a defense mechanism or something like that, it was just always strange. It's like I think a lot of people misunderstood and were always like, how is he so close with these people? How does he have so many friends? And and I think I didn't let a lot of people into my inner circle and something like that. But my inner circle was always really tight. You know,
did you follow David Cho?
Which one?
He's that guy that
the artist guy.
What was he?
The artist guy?
Yeah, the artist guy.
The really rich one or the David Cho we know in real life? Oh yeah.
The rich one.
Yeah. I saw his Joe Rogan podcast like 7 years ago or something.
He has his own show now and all that stuff, but essentially
Asa Akira, right?
Well, he did that. That was, I guess, a previous generation. Now he does a show that's kind of like therapy essentially, where he'll interview all these like famous actors and all these people and like kind of dissect their world, and like Steve-O and like Dwight from The Office. And essentially he's like helping them heal, like, hey, like you're famous because you're trying to make up, like, you know, by being super funny or whatever. Or in Steve's case, like he was trying to get his mom's attention because she was a nurse and she was so busy for him that the only way she would be able to see him is when he went into the hospital with, like, you know, all these injuries and stuff like that. But I feel like a lot of the stuff we're talking about is what David preaches a lot. It's pretty,
you know. And for anybody watching this, it's like, man, if there has not been like 2 weeks consecutive where you've been sober, is give sobriety a chance. Like, I'm not saying quit for the rest of your life, right? Because I'm not a saint either. But the thing is, you got to try sobriety. And like, when you, like, I remember the first time that I actually experienced sobriety, it was, I think it was like 4 months into not drinking and going to the gym and stuff, is I thought so clearly. I thought so clearly. Huh. I was like, holy crap, everything makes so much sense. I'm literally like, I'm a high performing machine. My brain was a high performing machine, and I realized it. And it was such an addiction. Sobriety was such an addiction. I didn't drink for 7 years or 8 years.
Wow. Good for you, man.
You know,
it's interesting. Cause I didn't realize how, cause I would have like one drink a week. Right. So I was like, oh, I'm not addicted. And then I'm doing this thing called 75 hard. Have you heard of it?
No.
It's essentially 75 days of you do two workouts a day, one outside, and you don't drink for 75 days. And it was, and it's so hard for me to do that. Like, I didn't even realize, like, even one drink, like on Saturdays, I was craving it, you know? And so sobriety is a lot harder than I thought. I didn't even realize, because a lot of this stuff is unconscious, right? Like one drink here. And then over the course of the month, you know, that could be like eight drinks, you know, which is not bad, but even cutting out those eight drinks was extremely hard for me, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's all about self-awareness. It's always about trying new things. And for anybody that's watching, any of my friends or anything like that, and you've never done any emotional intelligence work or anything, it's give it a try. It's not for everybody, mm-hmm. but the thing is like, what I got out of it is probably different than what Davidson got out of it, you know? So you got in, right? You got in, I interrupted you. You got in, you met with Christine Wu, and yes. then?
Yeah, so, I mean, I would say fast forward, like, like you said, there was a lot of limiting beliefs around like traveling. Cause I guess a lot of my blocks was around money, because like I grew up pretty poor and my mom does nails for a living. And my dad was a bartender at Benihana. Right. So like growing up, I didn't realize how that would play to my confidence. So I just never thought I would even be able to make six figures in my life, which is such a crazy concept for me to think that I was at that point at one, you know, cause I think sometimes I take for granted like how far I've come, but so yeah, a lot of my limiting beliefs were around like I needed a lot of external validation, right? For me, it was like winning the awards, like getting the promotions at LinkedIn and being acknowledged in front of the whole company, like the 17,000 people at LinkedIn. Like that was all of my energy was striving towards that. And then I realized like, and then the pandemic kind of like shook me, because it made me realize like, oh shit, like I was spending 80 hours a week at work, because I was just trying to like do everything for everyone, you know? And then I realized I wasn't doing anything for myself. So I've been doing a lot. The last 2 years have been like pretty deep stuff, like doing, I would say 10 to 15 hours of this stuff, like, you know, it's like it compounds. But yeah, I would say my life is much different than it was before, when I was being like a pretty shitty husband and stuff like that.
And so I want to talk more deeper about a couple of things you said, and for people listening, limiting beliefs, what are they?
So it's like barriers and boundaries or limits that we put on ourselves that a lot of times are unconscious. It's blind spots, I would say. Mm-hmm. So for me, a lot of the blind spots were around, am I good enough? Do people like me? So my unanswerable question is, do you love me? So that was like how, so this is more exaggerated, but they make you do the exaggerated thing, so you see how crazy it is. So I would just go up to everyone and be like, do you love me? Do you love me? And that would, you know, you do that for like half an hour and you get really sick of it. And you're like, oh shit, like this is how I'm being with other people, like trying to get them to like, pat me on the head, you know?
And 99.9%, when do those limiting beliefs start?
Yeah, when you're a kid.
Yeah. You know, I think that's the most important thing that people have to understand, is that you have to do some real work in order to figure it out. You know, I'll just put in, for example, is like, I have a really bad temper, right? And there's this woman that probably everybody in the personal development work, EQ world knows, Sylvia Badashi. She's amazing. She's awesome. And I remember she was sitting there and she's like, why, what triggers you? Right. And she's like, you know what, Steve, is like, I want to tell you about an exercise I do, is when something makes me upset. I take 3 seconds and I think, why is this making me upset? What happened? And then I just go back in time and it inevitably, it always goes back to something with my parents or family or something when I was a young kid that I didn't realize traumatized me and actually, you know, still created triggers. And I don't want people to think that I still don't lose my temper. I do, but I just don't stay in that realm of anger as long. Cause some days I would be angry for like a day, you know. Now I'll just be angry for like maybe 15 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes or something like that, or even less, you know?
Yeah. It's a great analogy. I love that example. Yeah. It's like, you're not perfect. Right. But you're in it. It takes you out less than, like, for me, it'll take me out like 15 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour max. Whereas it used to take me out for like the whole day, you know? Yeah.
And also I think another thing is, it's like, you know, obviously Davidson is still in the work, you know, and he's still working on himself. It's because anything that, like, in my opinion, anything that says that it's going to fix you or cure you is bullshit. Right. Yeah. And I think any true coach, any true life coach, any true master trainer or any, you know, program will tell you, you constantly have to work at it. And my life coach, Robin Williams, right, from Choice, she's the owner and founder of Choice Center. She always says, Steve, the moment you think you have it, it slips out of your hand and you lost it. And I never understood that, you know, but the thing is like, I see a lot of my friends, they get on, we call it the juice, you know, when they complete a course or like a program, they're crushing life, they're doing everything. And then they wait till they get back to their old routine, right? To come back again. And I think I saw that and I was very aware of that. So what I did was anytime that I would not be at peak performance, I would either call someone that was on my team or in my class or even Robin, or I would just go back and take a course, right? And just re-up on the juice, right? You know, so yeah.
I love that. The juice, that's funny. We call it the juice in Landmark as well.
Yeah, it's the juice, baby. You know what I mean? It's like you come back and you just, you know, like you believe you can do anything. Like, I don't know what your program is like, but I remember like after I did my program, you know, I volunteered and I coached a bunch of classes, but again, the center was like 10 minutes from my, like 7 minutes from my house. Right.
That's awesome.
It was amazing. Right. So I had, and like, I volunteered to give, you know, the trainers a ride, you know, from the airport.
Smart. You're freaking genius.
I got to sit down with them for like 20, 25 minutes and talk to them. Yeah. You know, so I got like this inside look at how everything was going. And I just remember they would just like sit there and talk to me, like, you know, Chris Lee, you know, what a great dude.
Chris Lee is the man. He's still my favorite out of everyone I've met.
Bro, he does the second course for Landmark, right?
Next level training. He does a lot of the courses. He does three of the courses that I did that were like 3-day courses.
Yeah, you know, he's the man. And like, it's so, like, when you get to be in a car with him and speak to him on a different level, it's so different, right? Because his trainings, like, he's just such a master in his trainings that it auto, like, when you're in the back of the room and you're just volunteering and stuff, like, you see what's coming and people don't even see that it's coming.
Yeah. It's so masterful. It's hard to even, he's like on another level for sure.
Yeah. And actually, like, if you guys don't know him, he has a book out and one of his people was actually Lewis Howes.
That's how I met Chris. Cause Lewis Howes puts on the 3-day conference in Columbus, Ohio every year.
Yeah. You know, I've actually never done a conference.
Oh
yeah. I've never done a conference or anything like that. I always, you know, for me, you know, I always looked at this self-work as, you know, just tools. Right. And I think in Landmark, do you guys have something called stretches?
I think I know what you're talking about. Is it just like, you're really, really pushing yourself beyond your comfort zone?
No. So your life coach or your volunteer coach, right, during your program, they'd be like, for example, I'll use myself as an example and I'll use this. I always had a problem asking for help. Right. And I remember during one of the courses, like, you know, everybody gets up and they're like, who has Steve helped? And like a lot of people raise their hand and they're like, who would like to help Steve or support Steve? Right. And the hands go up and they're like, how many of you had the joy of actually supporting Steve? And they're like, no hands go up. Cause I just do everything myself. Right. And I just remember like, and then they were like, how does that make you feel?
Oof.
To the person. And they would tell, like, they would talk. And I was like, oh my God, like, I'm hurting people by not allowing them to give right? Because I don't know how to receive, you know? And then we went one step further. And I remember Robin Williams, she actually put me on a stretch to go and to the Las Vegas Strip and beg. And I had to beg and get $20, right? And they honey dick you, right? Because they're like, can I put you on a stretch? And you're like, fuck. They don't tell you what it is. So I'm like, yes. And then she goes, you have to go on the strip. And, you know, this is done with integrity. And then after you raise the $20, then just give it to a homeless person or something like that, right? And bro, that thing took me like 3 hours, bro.
Wow. Yeah, right. That's so funny. So we had to do the same thing for accomplishment coaching. And I struggled. It was so hard for me to get money, like to ask for money. Like I failed it. Like, honestly, like I just couldn't do it. Yeah.
But that's the crazy thing. And that's actually a good segue is like, you know, you see my Instagram, you see my Facebook now. Now it's just like, I'm just shocked by how many people want to support me, right? Like just from Instagram stories is like I raised 93 tablets, right, for underprivileged kids here in Colombia, right? So wow. I think it's something that we've like when I learn something is I apply it, you know, and I make sure that I don't abuse it, right? And so the thing is like anything we learn in these emotional intelligence courses, like I think they can be weaponized. And that's what people don't realize, right? Or they can be used to rationalize, which is even worse.
It's true.
And every time that I coached a course or something like that, I remember telling the people, I was like, number one is be careful of your language. Don't speak too much. Like, you know, like if you talk about vulnerable, if you told me about vulnerability 10 years ago, I would have been like, that's motherfucking weakness and I don't got none. Now when we talk about vulnerability, it's different because there's levels, there's layers, right?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, there's a guy named Keith Bentz, right? And I think he's retiring soon, but he learned from the original samurai creator, right? And I remember just in the car and just whenever I'd have him alone, we would just talk about the many layers of humility, you know, because like that was my biggest weakness is just like I have zero humility. You know what I mean? And so like, I would always like understand the like layers and layers of humility. And it's just like, I'm not there yet. You know what I mean? But I'm never going to be there. And I accept that. And, you know, it's just always learning about yourself. And then like, I don't want to get too much into it, but man, once you start getting into the shadow work, holy shit.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But I don't really want to get into that, but you know,
like
it's insane what you learn about yourself. And when you get over these limiting beliefs, when you get over these hangups or something like that, like you'd be shocked at what you can accomplish. You know, when people tried to get me to enroll into Choice Center, I remember like a lot of my friends were going through it. It was like the cool thing to do. And I remember a lot of them were like, Steve, you're one of the most successful, abundant people we know. If you do this course, you're going to become a next level. Like, you know, it's rock. Like winner, winner. I'm like, bro, I'm like, who the fuck are you? Like, I'm like, why are you telling me? Like, you're broke. I'm like, why are you talking to me about this? Right?
Yep. Yeah.
And then I remember I was in San Diego and I just met this guy, you know, and it was just a group function. And I just remember, he's like, yeah, I just did Choice Center. I was like, what? And he's like talking to me. He's like, yeah. He's like, you know, after the discovery, you know, after the first weekend, he's like, he was Asian also. He goes, I hugged my mom for 2 minutes and looked her in the eyes and I told her, I love you. And I was like, wait a minute. And it just didn't come out. I was like, this course helped you do that? And at that time, like I was never close with my parents or anything like that. And I was like, sign me up, you know? And it was crazy. Cause like people were offering to pay for me. People were offering to do all this stuff for me. And I was like, no, and I remember like, I just paid for myself. I remember I went there. And I learned a lot about myself and I didn't realize how much of a misogynist I was, you know, like I didn't realize like how much of a, I just learned so much about myself and it was insane. And I really do credit, you know, why I'm so committed to this work and everything is because like, you know, obviously my mom got diagnosed with cancer in 2013, you know, it was pretty bad. And in 2016, she passed away. So she was fighting cancer for 3 years. And, you know, she had 20 something rounds of chemo. They were killing her. You know, they were killing her.
Wow.
And if it wasn't for, you know, this kind of work and the support system that I had, I'd probably just rage drinking, rage drugs, or just doing shit and living in Las Vegas, man, like it was so accessible. But having that support system and being able to be vulnerable and have conversations with people and be able to trust, have those trusting relationships, it really saved, I tell people it saved my life.
Yeah, man, that's beautiful. I love how family was the thing that you saw I think family for me was also it. So my mom and my sisters actually just did Landmark, and that was, it was the first time it was translated in Vietnamese. So, oh man, the way my mom is completely transformed, like it's like night and day, you know. I never even thought that would be possible because she doesn't even speak English well, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was kind of like, oh, this is for people who like speak English. Mm-hmm. But man.
I remember during my leadership program, which is the 100-day training. I don't know if you guys have something similar.
Yeah, okay. Ours is called the Self-Expression Leadership Program.
Yeah. And so I remember my one of my goals was to have a 10 relationship with my mom. Right. And I remember my coach was relentless and was like, what does that look like? Blah, 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 blah. And I remember for 45 straight days, I called my mom.
Wow. Oh my God.
And I had such a good support system. Like I did this course like 9 years ago. I still talk to my buddy, like my partner in the group, like every day.
Yeah. You know?
And so for 45 awesome. Days, I remember
that's tough,
you know, calling her. And I didn't want to call her, but we had our calls, we had our buddy, and we had our support system. And they were like, Steve, did you make your call today? I'm like, no.
Yep.
What are you waiting for? You know? And I'm just like, motherfucker. And I think people don't understand what it was like. Is my mom had cancer. And you know, I didn't speak to my parents at one point for 7 years. You know?
Wow.
And I remember, you know, a lot of the conversations, like she was blaming me for a lot of things. And, you know, she blamed me for her cancer. You know, she blamed me for like ruining her life. And I remember it was such a tough conversation. And I remember getting coached, you know, like, and in hindsight, it's really easy. I was like trying to prepare something, and I was trying to be the same Steve that she had always known. Right. Like she had always known. And I was trying to game the system, right. I was trying to game the system or something like that. And I remember on the 46th day, right? I remember she was yelling at me, and I just broke down, and I was like, Mom, like, I don't know, you know, like when you yell at me, I just stop. And all I want is, you know, to love you and to be the son that you deserve. And I want to be. Wow. And I remember she went silent. And I thought like she was going to ream me. Right. She was going to, and then she just started crying. And then we just, at that point, we just had this kind of conversation about everything. And then fast forward, like, I remember this a year later is we were just sitting on a couch. She was laying on a couch. I was laying on a couch, and I just look at her and I go, you know, Mom, I love you. And you did your best and you did an amazing job. And she just takes a big sigh of relief. And we just start talking. She just starts telling me how she thought she fucked up everything. And you know, she blamed herself on everything. And a lot of people always tell me, hey, you know, like, I'm sorry that your parents. And I had 3 years with my mom. You know, she started out with, I think, pancreatic cancer. Right. So it was like a death sentence from the beginning.
Yeah. You
know? And so luckily, like not luckily, but, you know, I feel, you know, I hear so many stories about, you know, car accidents, strokes, heart attacks, and they just lose their parent overnight.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I just felt so fortunate. And I think that's the reason why is like, it's not about the money. It's not about my career. It was about the relationship that I have with my family now and with the people around me. And yeah, like everybody gets something different out of it. But for me, why I became kind of a soldier for this work and a big proponent of this work is because of that. You know, my experience was amazing. And I think for us Asians, like we're so good at following structure. I don't want to be racist or whatever it is, but we're good at following structure.
Yeah.
And, but aren't you shocked at how many Asians never tell their parents or they don't tell their children, I love you?
So many, yeah, like 90 something percent of
yeah, it's insane, bro. It's you know,
crazy, yeah.
Like I had like my buddy during the 100-day program. He never told his 6-year-old and 4-year-old daughters that I love you.
Easy, yeah. That'll mess you up. That'll mess the kid up. Yeah,
it messes everybody up, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Both, yeah. It's,
you know,
yeah.
And I think that's the thing about it. It's like, you know, like for me, it's like civic responsibility and responsibility. I don't know if you guys do this, but you know, at the end of the leadership program, like we raise money for like a charity or something, right?
So yeah,
I
guess everything
comes from Mindspring or Lifespring or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, Mindspring. Yeah.
Yeah, Mindspring, right? So the thing is like, you know, so I remember we did ours with the worst school in Las Vegas. And oh. I had such hesitation about it, right? Because it was like, It was like, yeah, like I really did. Because like everybody else was doing like St. Jude, all the classes were doing like St. Jude's, like cool. And we did one for the school and I had a problem with it, right? Because I just had a problem with it, right? And so then, man, like, but on the last day we went to that school and like it changed my perspective about everything, because that school was 93% Hispanic, right? And so yeah. I had a problem with it being so, you know, like that whatever, you know what I mean? Like, you know, that much concentration of one race, right? Like I wouldn't have wanted to be 93% Asian, white, black, anything. Like I would have wanted something more diverse, right? And so I remember going there and I forgot all of that when I saw it was about the kids. That's what really changed my perspective on everything, right? And you know, over the last, like, you know, 7 years, I've done a lot of education projects in Southeast Asia. You know, I moved to Medellin, Colombia, you know, two months ago, I moved, right?
Wow.
So in October of 2019, yeah, I came down here and visited for to backpack, ended up convincing my friends to have their bachelor party because they booked the bachelor party for my first week here. I didn't want to fly back. So I told them, hey, let's do Medellin, convinced all their wives, right? Ended up coming here, fell in love with it. Did not, I have never left Medellin, by the way. Like I've never been to another city in South America. I went there for, it was only supposed to be 13 days here. Ended up staying the whole 3.5 months.
Wow.
Ended up going back home, donating everything. Even my car, donated everything.
Wow.
Got all my business and stuff in order. 7 months later, I moved down here. You know, and I've been here since October 18th of 2019. So probably 2 years.
That's crazy. Two, yeah.
You know? And so, man, like, yeah, it's insane, right? But I've always been that guy, right? I've always been that guy. I've always been like, fuck New Jersey, I'm out, Las Vegas, you know?
Yeah.
Like, fuck New York, New Jersey, I'm going to Philly, you know? And I've always been that guy. Like, it's just like, I know when I'm done, you know? Mm-hmm. And I guess like the only thing I really miss is like, you know, seeing our friends' kids grow up. It's tough, man. It's tough.
Yeah,
it's tough when they call you uncle and then you go back and you're not uncle anymore and you're like, damn, bro, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I definitely have
kids soon? Are you
not yet soon? We're gonna do the whole traveling the world and all that first, and yeah, we have plans to travel to a lot of countries in the next few years.
Have you been to Vietnam yet?
No, I haven't. I was going to go, and then, you know, the whole pandemic thing is making it hard for, you know.
So Colombia is my favorite country, right? The second favorite country. Vietnam is my first.
Wow.
I spent 2 months there. I motorbiked Vietnam.
That's awesome.
I motorbiked it, like, and ended up extending. Like, I loved it there. It was amazing.
That's what everyone says. Like, everyone says, like, Vietnam is their favorite country.
Yeah, I didn't really like Saigon or Ho Chi Minh, whatever you want to call it, in Hanoi. Yeah. But all the cities in between, like the mountain cities and stuff. Like, Vietnam is one of the safest and friendliest countries that I've been to. It's just impossible to start a business there, you know?
Oh,
so
okay.
I really wanted to start a business, but you have to have a Vietnamese partner. And I just was not down for that. So
oh, like, I see.
Countries where you have to be 50-50 with a local. And so I was just not going to do that. But that's why Colombia was so, like, I think a lot of our friends, like when I moved down here, they're just like drugs and women, you know, they think so. But really it's just for me, there's no sense of community anymore in America. It's like, I'll visit my friends, even in New Jersey, like whatever. And I'll see their neighbor. I'll talk to them for like 5-10 minutes. I'm like, hey, I met Brad. They're like, who? I'm like, your neighbor. Who? I'm like, so the guy true. That lives right next to you, bro. Like, and they're like, oh, he's weird. You know?
So true. Like, it's so true.
I'm like, bro, I was like, you know, like, I've literally gone to New York and someone will like close the door on someone because they don't know if they live in their building or not. I'm like, bro, how do you know that they don't live in the building? They're like, no.
So sad. Yeah.
I'm like, wow. No, and that's not like how crazy. It is. You know? And so, yeah. And so what did you do for your legacy project? Like, you know.
Yes. It's a lot. It's orphans in Vietnam. Yeah. So we help a lot of orphans. It's like a mentorship program where, you know, a lot of these kids are like abused and they obviously don't have any mentors. So we paired them up with like, you know, background check the professionals, make sure they're all like, you know, good people, good standing. So they support them with like a lot of, so once a month there's like programming where they'll meet their mentors. It's all day where, so yeah, it's been good. And, you know, we pay for like the books and the school supplies and stuff like that too. And, you know, they live at the orphanage as well.
Your money is going to a good place because it's strange. Like, you know, doing a lot of work in Southeast Asia, like it's obvious in like Cambodia and Thailand. Like if you're not in the schools, you're working on the farm.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. A lot of these kids are going to go to the school. Like even in Vietnam, like in Asia, in Southeast Asia, like education is so revered.
Yeah.
That's one of the biggest things that we're battling here is like, we need to incentivize the kids to actually go to the schools here, you know? And so in Asia, it's farm or school. Here it's play on the streets or school. What do you think they're going to choose? You know?
Right. Yeah.
And so, yeah, man, like, have you ever been to South America?
I've been to Cartagena before.
Really? What'd you think of it?
It was cool. It was fun. I think, like, I don't know. Like, I'm weird. Like, when I'm somewhere foreign, like, I like it for like a couple of days, and then I really miss like everyone back home. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm very attached, I feel like, to like New York City, and like I think I'm just used to, you know, K-Town and stuff like that. Like I don't know, man.
You like seeing the same people over and over and over again?
I have a pretty big network, so I switch it up like pretty often. So I don't get tired of that, because I have like, you know, maybe like a couple thousand different friends. So every month I'm hanging out with like different people. So I don't really have like a core group of people like you do. I feel like I feel like I'm like, I go through groups of people.
No, it's the truth though. It's like, you know, whenever you try to merge your group of friends, it's just impossible.
Yeah. It's hard. I mean, I've done it. Like I had a 4th of July barbecue where I had like 10 different groups of people came. Right. But it was stressful because I felt like I had to host everyone, you know? But
yeah. And the thing is like, so I remember like some of our friends started hanging out with some of my older friends, like for my birthday. And the way that they were talking to me, like my older friends were talking to me, like everybody was like, oh shit, Steve's going to explode, you know? And they thought that I was going to like retire, but it was a different, I was the little brother, right? I was, I got shat on and I was good with that. Right. So
yeah.
A lot of people, like, it's hard to like merge these things. Cause like your relationships, the way that you're treated or the way you allow yourself to be treated changes. And so, like I learned that a long time ago. Like, it's really difficult to merge your groups and stuff like that. And sometimes it's just better because like you need that separation.
Yeah. Well, I do have a meeting in 2 minutes. Steve, this was awesome. Like, it was such a fun conversation. I'll definitely have you back because I feel like there's so much more we can talk about.
Oh, dude, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff and I'm fascinated by it, but don't be late for your meeting.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, everybody.
Appreciate you, brother. Take care. Bye.